This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Well, welcome to our listeners, Doc and Guru Week again, and great to have in the studio Strini Naika, who is the VP of Commercial and Content Distribution at Paramount Africa. But before I introduce that, obviously this has been the most extraordinary historic week in terms of developments in the UK, and I guess if you were to invade a foreign country this week, you'd probably get away with it because everybody would be reporting the Queen's demise. But it's not all bad news. The doc's in London, so he will be giving us a detailed report of the vibe and that in London. But so we're looking forward to that. And but coming back to Strini. Strini, welcome. It's really good to have you. Thanks for making the time in the studio today.
Good morning, Gordon. Thank you very much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here.
So you haven't aged. You're worrying me. I must have to get you dope tested for performance enhancing. What's it? Collagen or whatever. You're looking younger than ever. You're obviously relaxed and enjoying the world at the moment.
Absolutely. It's a busy body, and I think that's what keeps me young. Yeah.
Fantastic. Strini, I mean, you've had a really rich and varied media journey from early days at the SABC to a spell even on the agency side. I want to talk a little bit about your learnings there. What would you be able to share with listeners? How do you balance the sales and the marketing and the media buying side at the moment into the TV content sector? But just before we get into your journey, I never realized that you're a corporate banker. You came out of a First Rand corporate banking background. What do you think of the financial skills? I mean, media is money. What do you think of the financial skills in the industry at the moment? Are we up to speed?
It's quite an interesting question because, you know, the first few days in media was very, very overwhelming for myself. moving straight out of the international balance sheet, which I was responsible for at First Rand Bank and for first place to media, and especially the Koperasi, SABC, was really a big shock for me. I made the decision for various reasons when I was called to come and meet with the SABC. But to answer you directly, there was a lack of financial skills within the media industry, specifically in the broadcast industry when I got there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what actually really got me to stand out of the clutter.
Yes.
It was really an advantage, and I think it's an advantage for many other individuals that I can think about right now that actually really shined when they came into the media industry by having that skill. And it's quite interesting. The other day, I actually had a chat with a colleague in the industry, and I was explaining the whole rationale around a general ledger. And a general ledger is generally taught in basic modules of accounting.
Yes.
But a general ledger makes you basically think very methodically. And I think it's not just about the financial skills that come out of accounting modules or financial modules, but it's the methodical nature of how an individual should think and how you apply basically that one principle to basically any process that you may define, whether it's media or any other industry for that matter. And then I referred back and I said, are we really driving maybe these modules within our AAAs or our Vegas or some other, you know, institution that's related to media? And I don't think we're doing that enough. And we aren't. Where the issue is. Yeah,
absolutely. We're 100% on the same page. That's my concern, that as more and more finance becomes part of the equation, I'm not seeing evidence of those financial skills being taught in the various modules that are available. And you know, also just your point about general ledger is cause and effect. Something happens over here, there's an effect over there. How do you manage that cause and effect? And that's – which is the essence of media planning. Everything you do is cause and effect.
Absolutely, Gordon. And I'll go to another example, and it's been talked about for years right now. We knew that data is going to get larger and larger.
Yes.
And it's affecting us even more. You know, fragmentation is something we shouldn't even talk about because it's there. It's a given. It's a constant.
Yeah.
But getting back to basically data – the way you basically analyze data and interpret data and basically create process flows around data to inform pricing or basically currency within media has to have some sort of academia that helps you do it.
Yeah.
And that's why I refer to these finance or simple finance and accounting modules as well.
So, I mean, how do you balance, you know, let's talk about your journey now through the SABC, head of revenues, headed up radio sales, TV sales. I mean, you really, you know, climbed the ladder very quickly at a 45-degree angle. How do you balance that sort of general ledger, ticking everything methodically mindset with, you know, your legendary people skills? I mean, you've got a real knack of talking and communicating with people. How do you maintain the balance?
Firstly, I must say I was very fortunate. So whilst it was a shock for me to enter the industry, and it's been 20 years now, I started on the 1st of November 2003 at the SABC. It was really a shock, but it was actually beautiful because I could bring these financial skills to an industry, specifically a broadcaster that had clout in the days, to actually kind of reshape the industry. I think it was early days in the sense that I got in too quickly and I never explained myself too well to the industry with all the change that took place at the SABC. The amount of innovation that I personally brought in with obviously the teams that were there, because it wasn't just my credit, changed the industry radically. We introduced ad splits on radio with Favre and Metro, which got in a whole lot of radio advertisers to advertise on national stations when they couldn't afford it in 2004.
Yeah.
When I got into television as GM, we launched ad splits on television. Clients that were on radio that couldn't spend on television got in 2006. Mm-hmm. I can refer to basically Charlie, who was the MD of the media shop in Durban that always uses case study, and he used a client by the name of Nagia Butcheries, which is now big in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
Did not basically think about evolving their business into the Gauteng area. When mistakenly our team placed their ad on the splits, I think it was Metro 5, I'm not sure, in Gauteng versus the split that they bought in Durban, they got more calls out of Gauteng for their product.
Yes.
And now they probably have three or four stores here that's really kind of dictating the butchery space.
Yeah.
And that's how we reshaped the industry in totality, not just in media.
Yeah.
But then there were also certain initiatives that I drove that I think the industry never understand at that time. And I'll give you a good example about this as well. When we launched the long-term rate card, maybe we didn't explain it well in 2007, but it was great for the industry because the SABC was just constrained by ICASA in 2006 March to bring the airtime down from 18 to 12. If we did not go with an initiative like that, we wouldn't have been able to basically accommodate the demand on the public broadcaster that had massive ratings in 2007.
Yeah.
And it was all these financial elements that helped reshape basically how I thought we'd need to reshape the industry.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't explained well, but there was very good intent. But it was all driven by numbers.
Yeah.
And ultimately, even in that project, the industry gained because ultimately they could get more agency come out of the relative spend from their clients.
Yeah.
And the other broadcasters latched on. Because now we built the TV industry rather than basically kind of letting it shrink or just not be able to, be able to actually I can't find the right word.
That's fine.
To basically accommodate the demand that was expected.
Yeah, but I think that's the point. We can track back to that time, the growth of television as an industry, rather than a couple of TV channels where you bought spots. I mean, I think it became a broader, more interactive engagement across a lot of things. And, of course, you're talking about Charlie Hale down in Durban, the world's favorite hairline. Coming back to that, so, I mean, in those days, really, you were maximizing the commercial value of content. It's much the same thing that you're doing as Paramount, but it's kind of a broader. I mean, you've got to establish the role of the content first and then maximize the value. Would that be a fair differentiation? Is it kind of content plus?
I think before I even comment on that, it was really difficult when you move from the public broadcast to commanding all those ratings and kind of creating currencies to pay TV.
Yes.
It was a very difficult move in a sense that you don't have the luxury of the double-digit ratings.
Mm.
So to your point, on the Paramount side, being a global player with established brands, but not having too many brands within the local contents of Africa versus what we have in the global space, we had to basically really prove firstly that our content works such that we could package it for channels on MultiChoice, right?
Yes.
And that was just the one piece, because within the pay TV space amongst various players right now, you have to package your content, you sell it off to basically broadcasters or distribution owners like MultiChoice or Star Times and a whole host of other players in Africa. And thereafter, basically, you start actually trying to monetize it from a commercial perspective.
Yeah.
But you sit with a whole host of more fragmentation, right?
Yes.
And tiny, tiny ratings. So we play very much in the content space because we've got multiple studios globally, as much as 8 or 9 studios right now, from Paramount to CBS to Showtime to MTV to BT, and it goes on. But we also basically started to acquire assets because we knew over the last few years specifically with the migration now into OTT and streaming that – whilst you provide content, you cannot maximize the revenue fully if you do not own the platform.
Yeah.
And that gave rise to basically Paramount changing its name firstly from Viacom CBS to Paramount, because it resonates more from a streaming perspective, but also to many other audiences out in the global space, into products like Paramount Plus and Pluto TV, which is now the fastest growing FAST platform in the globe.
Tell us a little bit about that Pluto platform and the growth. Where does it fit in? I mean, in my limited kind of global view, it's kind of Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime, etc. So, I mean, am I comparing apples with apples when we talk Pluto?
Apples, but probably different shapes of apples. Okay. And I think that's a better way to put it, right? So now we're migrating a lot out of the linear and the terrestrial space globally.
Yes.
Not so much in Africa, but it's going there. And I've read many articles and people are saying it's going there. Getting into more the streaming space, you could actually look at it in various angles. I think we should start with OTT, because we tried out OTT in the South African space.
Yep.
And OTT standing for over the top, which is very much online kind of telco type of products. So typically, you'd have heard of Vodacom Videoplay, which is an OTT service. It's through the telco. It's basically content that's actually hosted and actually consumed by individuals that are customers of Vodacom. Moving into the OD space, when I say OD space, we've got all these ODs, VODs, right? Yeah. It starts off with SVOD, which I think South Africans know very well, because we actually are not at a saturation point, and I'll explain what I mean just now. So you'd know SVOD as subscription video on demand, to be Netflix or Showmax or Disney Plus Now or Amazon Prime, which are all services that come to you on demand, so at your convenience, but you pay a sub. Then you move into another space on the video on demand, and that's BVOD and AVOD and FAST. Obviously, BVOD being broadcast video on demand, where broadcast will package their content, similar to like an EVOD type of scenario, and actually serve it through multiple distribution points of streaming, whether it's through an OTT or basically other streaming platforms that they create themselves through app-based products to a consumer.
Yeah.
But it's still on demand, right? And it's pretty much free in the BVOD and the AVOD space, the AVOD being advertising video on demand.
Yeah.
But now there's a new product that's coming out. It's not new, it's old in the global sense, but these are called FAST products. Now, FAST products are free ad-supported streaming television products. It's the difference between an AVOD product and a FAST product is really a FAST product has two components, which is pretty strong. It's got the on-demand side, which is very much AVOD, advertising video on demand, but it's also got the free ad-supported streaming television side, which stands for FAST.
Yeah.
And that's basically actual channels that's actually broadcast through streaming platforms to consumers that you don't pay for, but you have to accept the ads. So if you come back to South Africa right now, a typical product will be a Vue product.
Yes.
A Vue product has some free ad-supported streaming television channels, but they've also got paid. Pluto, on the other side, is a true FAST product where there's no pay. And you basically get access to hundreds of channels literally by just going onto an app and playing as long as you've got data or Wi-Fi.
Yes, yes.
And then you've also got the on-demand side. Now, from a global sense, the biggest players within FAST is Pluto TV, which has over 70 million monthly average users right now.
Okay.
Then there's Tubi TV, which comes very much in line with Pluto TV. And then there's Fubo TV, and there's a whole host of others. But none of them are yet in the African space.
Okay.
And so Pluto is owned by Paramount Plus. We bought it 7 or 8 years ago. And globally right now, we've got more than 1,000 channels in multiple languages that are ready, packaged to be launched in South Africa in the next 6 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just at a function, Mags on Media Breakfast this morning. We were chatting about, you know, sort of technology and advancements. And for me, what's interesting, and I don't know why the industry hasn't celebrated more, is the move to ad-supported channels from Netflix and Amazon Plus and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus. Because suddenly we're back in the game of making TV commercials. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. Or am I missing the point? Is this why is there not more noise and dancing in the streets? Suddenly, maybe it's going to be a programmatic bar. Maybe that's the downside from the media planner's perspective. How do you see all this thing playing out now?
So there's a big constraint right now.
Yeah.
And the big constraint, and I've seen it and I've heard it and I've spoken about this very widely when I go out to the industry, that television audience measurement survey stats and TAMs specifically is shrinking because mainly there's more consumption out of the other dimension being gaming and SVOD and all these other VODs that we talk about. Coming back to your point, Gordon, clients are feeling the pain right now because whilst these other platforms are gaining and increasing in terms of size and consumption from their current consumers, they can't place their ads there. You can't place an ad on Netflix, neither with Disney Plus.
Yeah.
We've also seen basically globally what's happening right now with Netflix's share price. What, a few months ago, just over $600, now sitting at sub $200, mainly due to the fact that players are also actually competing within the space. So Netflix had the luxury years ago to buy from Fox Studios or Paramount Studios or Peacock through Comcast. But now they've all pulled back their contracts and they're also limited to basically the content they can provide. But getting back to what I'm saying, these guys cannot offer you the ad space, but they are going to start offering you the ad space very soon on possibly a hybrid model where you'll have no ads and then obviously a hybrid, which is a lesser price in terms of the sub.
Yeah.
So that may actually basically help in terms of the ads that are being created, but right now they can't place the ads. So we need more AVOD and FAST players as well, whilst the streaming consumption is increasing. We've done a survey very recently where we basically tested against, I think it was 175 streamers. So if the first question, if you don't have access to streaming, you can't continue. Mm. And we actually looked at the consumption of linear TV in its you know, legacy, historic sense versus streaming TV.
Yeah.
And if I can recall right now, weekends of a 48-hour weekend, you were looking at around about 16 or 17 hours of video content being consumed, of which 9 versus 8, I think, or was it 9 versus 7? 9 being streaming and the rest being linear in the historic sense was being consumed.
Mm.
So it goes to show that people are consuming more and more content, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's binge watching, maybe it was COVID, but they still continue to do that. But if it's only going to be on SVOD platforms, marketers are going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Is how do you basically get there? Now, if you go into FAST and AVOD platforms, which is very interesting, it's not just about the GRP. Obviously, it's now based on CPM and impression.
Yes.
And watch times, which is obviously equivalent to a TSL on radio or ATS on TV.
Mm.
Those are some of the currencies they need to monitor. But to break out of the clutter, you need to look at channel takeovers. You need to look at basically, you know, your pre-rolls basically before program starts.
Yes.
So you kind of get the attention of basically the consumer once again. But the whole shaping of how individuals and marketers and planners and agencies think needs to change even further than basically how we see it right now.
That's an interesting thought, because, I mean, if I think about it from a media planner's perspective, one tended to be looking at either you bought a spot or you bought into a space, a program space, and try to own that space. But you're actually saying you can go beyond that now and talk about actually owning an entire channel space or dominating a channel space rather than a program space.
Absolutely, Gordon. And it's like, you know, I said it earlier, forget about complaining about fragmentation right now. It's going to get even worse, probably 10 or 15, 20 times worse in the next year or so with these new entrants coming in the market. So you will be, there will be more fragmented, but think of all the other opportunities of actually kind of getting that attention span through that. And I think these new players coming in are much more open to actually bringing these elements of either, you know, sponsorable elements to, you know, customized elements versus some of the players that we have currently in our market that are very resistant to that, specifically broadcasters, because they think it's going to affect the editorial, right?
Yeah.
But these new players don't think that.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
So, I mean, there seems to be so much of a negative narrative in the industry press, you know, in terms of the traditional role of advertising agencies. But all of this, for me, signals whether you're making TV commercials and producing TV commercials or whether you're producing local content, it all sounds like good news. Or am I missing the point? I mean, for local content production, whether it's commercial content or viewing content, it's got to be good news for everybody.
It's good news, but it's also important that some of the marketers note that it has to be short.
Yeah.
So it's no longer the days where you think of a 60-second ad.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be short. So that's what's important, especially with this increased number of distributors or content providers that's coming. So that's number one. The second piece that's very important to note, this is a new space that's coming in. And I think the analytics are not going to be as advanced if you're comparing it to a television. You're not going to be able to actually kind of target specific demographics if it's not supported by certain data managed platforms, DMPs, and so forth as well. So those are some of the constraints that will come in.
Yeah.
However, you need to basically get to eyeballs to basically expose your product.
Yeah.
And I think they need to start tolerating that in the initial days. But I think the analytics will improve.
Yeah.
And that's also something that marketers should basically.
I mean, they have to improve. You mentioned earlier that the shift to CPM and impressions, and that's very much the case, particularly from procurement perspective. But if one looks, and you said, you know, it's not about the GRPs anymore, but reach and frequency are still critical. You know, you need to compute the total reach of your campaign, whether it's BVOD, you know, AVOD, SVOD, whatever, you need to know how many people you've reached and you need to know how often you've reached them. I mean, that goes without saying. So, I mean, how should planners balance this out? Because we've still got a bit of a cherry picking mindset, which is not a bad thing if I want to own a channel or space. How do I balance that out with CPMs? I mean, where does programmatic fit into this equation going forward? And how do I, as a young planner, find a space for myself? So I'm used to doing it with a piece of string and a ruler. There was a rate card and there was an audience and I connected the dots. Now programmatic will do that faster, better, more accurately and cheaper. So where do I fit in as a media planner into this equation? What do I need to do to up my game?
So the media mix is always very important. I think you can't isolate any media product in the various spaces, whether it be a TV, radio, outdoor, digital, and so forth. So the media mix is very important for the strategist to basically understand in terms of how they want to get out there, whether it's through non-traditional types of products or traditional products. I think there was an extreme and basically a panic somewhat. That's my personal view in South Africa, where everybody saw these digital products coming in. And 50-60% of some of the budgets has been just migrated into that.
Yes.
However, it was very limited in what they could buy. And I said this very openly in a roadshow I conducted a few months ago, where I said, if you're going to be playing in the exchange right now in the programmatic space, and you know, you're utilizing DV360 or Trade Desk or whatever, how many publishers are in there that's of relevance into the South African market right now? And I tell you what, Gordon, there are ones of substance, but the international product, right? So it's your YouTubes of the world, your Googles of the world, your Facebooks and so forth. But there's very limited ones that actually kind of really localize to your point that you make as well. But in addition to that, the programmatic basically ROI or currency they're deriving is only coming from two or three in terms of what I've mentioned. And you can't shift 50 or 60% of your budget to two or three, noting the fact that you've got all these other local broadcasters or media mixes, radio, TV, outdoor, whatever, that you're isolating. So to your point, reach is extremely important. You can get programmatic to get all these millions of impressions, but I think the segmentation of the budget is something that I think created paranoia and shifted lots of money into digital by basically just, you know, kind of utilizing the buzzwords or global articles that state that digital is the future. And people just migrated. I think planners, agencies, marketers need to rethink about how we shift that spend as these new players come in, but be cautious that it may be basically just 5 seconds and maybe 2 seconds that an individual's basically kind of consuming the ad on these digital products. I mean, think about it. I play a bit of gaming on my phone every so many minutes in a week. And I need to basically get to the next stage, right, of a game. So I need to watch an ad. I may watch the ad, right, or I may just take the ad and leave my phone on the side, right, and let the ad play. So I know it's 30 seconds later. You know, those are all the questions you need to ask as a marketer and an agency. How valuable is that ROI? You may be getting the impression, you may be serving your ad, but then there's other reliable media mixes within our local context that you can be definite or sure about that you can get ROI from.
So, you know, coming back to the Mags on Media Breakfast that I attended this morning, I mean, the topic was, are marketers terrified of technology? And one of the points which was raised in that discussion this morning was test and learn. You know, if you're going to move stuff around, test the outcomes, look at the ROI. But I mean, if I'm understanding you, and it's good news for planners, you're moving upstream. You've got to become more of a marketing advertising person who understands the big picture. Implementation and programmatic will remain something, but as long as you're moving upstream into the big discussion around allocation of budgets, strategic outcomes, measuring impressions against outcomes, that's the space we have to learn to get back into.
Yeah, and I tell you what, to support what you're saying right now, and we're not close to it. We're getting there quite quick with fiber being rolled out and stuff as well.
Yes.
The CTV, the connected television, smart TV, right, has not got enough consumption taking place through it.
Yes.
Because we know that TV and digital, as an example, works very well together. Yes. But how do you get that common currency across? When fiber is rolled out and when we convert to the digital migration, CTV will basically play a very big space, combined with mobile through obviously your streaming choices as a consumer. And then you can actually cross-currency them as well. But as you said, trial and test as you move along.
Yeah.
Don't go extreme, because sometimes you may go extreme and you're going to change your strategy very quick if you don't understand the product well, especially that we don't have very sophisticated currencies like what we have in radio and TV in this country on digital right now. Yeah. Because you can't go and break that Demodon further. It's hard.
That's such an interesting thought, that because I think there's a narrative which says that, you know, old audiences are lack granularity, and in fact it's the reverse very often, you know, that it is the old measurements that had a lot of granularity at a demographic and psychographic level anyway. And coming back to the incremental reach issue, because that's what it's all about. If you look at the Ehrenberg-Bass thinking, incremental reach is the big thing. So in the old days, incremental reach would have been SABC1 during the morning, SABC1 during the afternoon, and then I put one in at night and that'll give me incremental reach. But now you've got to go beyond that. So you're going to build incremental reach by going beyond the three big players you mentioned and start looking at some of the smaller players who are going to give you incremental reach in different areas, whether they're demographic, whether they're geographic, whether they're cultural, whether they're behavioral. I mean, you've got to spread it around a bit.
Yeah. The biggest issue we got, there's two issues we got there that I could refer to right now. The one is, I think when agencies basically saw this digital spend just kind of hockey stick effect rising, they separated their teams, right? And you've got a digital agency and a traditional agency in this, under the same roof but working separately.
Yep.
And that doesn't help. Because I mean, you need to find that cross barrier, crossover of the barrier to basically work together to get that incremental reach. If you're saying that digital mediums are just skyrocketing with this hockey stick effect type of scenario, that's the one issue. Then you got the other issue. This is my view again. We've got industry bodies that need to basically elevate their game. So if you're looking at the BRC right now, which is responsible somewhat for TV and radio. I mean, we can't even get future-proofing right.
Yes.
And that's an issue for me personally right now.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, if those bodies do not drive the best practice, everybody's sitting in limbo. Who do they look out to basically even get the traditional stuff right? Now we've got all these digital products coming in through FAST and AVOD and BVOD and SVOD. That's going to need a currency, but you may get one agency, and I'm not picking on any names, versus another agency buying for the same client, sorry, for the different clients in the same industry, a different methodology.
Yeah.
Who's trying to help basically kind of reshape at least basically 50, 60% of that methodology that they should be applying at the same time before they bring in their uniqueness, right?
Yeah.
So that's another issue as well. So getting back to your point, how do we get that incremental reach? It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough.
No, it's going to be tough. I mean, incremental reach is a wonderful concept in theory. In practice, it's also very, very expensive. So it's kind of a double-edged, sword in the sense that you want incremental reach, which is expensive. But in order to get incremental reach, you're buying smaller, more niched audiences, which are even more expensive. But the procurement guys are looking for a reduction in the CPM.
But it's also duplication, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you could be buying a different media type.
Yep.
You're not sure if you're reaching the same eyeball and the same ear or whatever as well.
Yeah.
And that's where these bodies need to come up with basically cross currencies that's informed by some sort of researcher. Yeah.
So talking about innovation, we're getting sort of close to wrap-up time. Paramount, obviously part of a global network, which must be fascinating. But I think new developments that have just become aware of, local partnerships, Paramount and Prime Media partnerships in that space, very interesting and very positive. Can you share a little bit about that? Is that on the table in the public domain, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it's in the public domain. It's a very good partnership that Prime Media and Paramount has basically set out to actually achieve. There's various points of similarity whilst they play in different spaces to create basically more consolidation within the industry.
Yes,
but obviously not consolidation from a business perspective, but by basically cross synergizing products. So we just talked about it right now, and how do you get that incremental reach? Mm. But you've got different broadcasters that's basically selling different products.
Yeah.
And I think it's about bringing in the video content space into the radio space, the outdoor space, and the amazing work that even Prime Media is doing on the retail space that can give you an omni type of currency or omni type of product.
Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to achieve, which I think is great. There's also brands within the Prime Media stable that are fantastic brands that have not been exposed from a video content perspective, like EWN.
Yeah.
EWN is an amazing brand that basically provides great news of integrity and quality to basically the South African audience. Taking that to a video space would just basically make perfect sense.
Would elevate it,
And you basically leverage the expertise of a video content player to do that as well. There's some great international formats which has been exposed through PrimeX a week or two ago on the Prime Media space that obviously will play in the TV space as well through distribution, like The Masked Singer or Deal or No Deal.
Yes.
And I think broadcasters ramping up their games outside of their comfort zones is important right now for consolidation and also basically make life easier for the marketer or the agency.
Yeah,
and I think this partnership is trying to achieve that.
So that's an interesting phrase, ramping up your game. And I think that's what I'm looking for, is the positive view in that. You could see it as a threat or you can ramp up your game. So in short, as we wrap up the series here today, what advice would you have especially for agency people who are on the other side of the desk from you? What are the two or three things I need to do to ramp up my game in order to anticipate a more open-ended partnership, a more varied partnership, a different financial model, maybe even a shared upside? Just a few things on how I should ramp up my game on the media agency side.
Okay, there's a lot to say, but I'm going to be very high level. I think we touched on a very key point earlier. I think the financial analytical skills are very important for newcomers to the agency world to be familiar with, but have that experience through obviously academia or other work. And I use the GL kind of example there, and that's important because it's not just about media, it's about what you get out of that financial basic qualification that can take you a long way. The second thing is, I think, don't look at options in isolation. I think many individuals, and I don't want to generalize here, look at basically one option in that media mix space to the other option, another media mix space, and they're not pulling them together or forcing them, the two players, to actually kind of think about how they actually work between, let's say, radio and TV, or radio and outdoor, or retail and outdoor, or whatever. So I think they need to push the game for broadcasters to basically synergize between competing products. Because that's how you're going to get the value and get your brands to stand out, basically, instead of just buying the normal, you know, the normal traditional vanilla product.
Because
everybody talks about, how do I break out of the clutter, right, for my clients? But you're not actually engaging with basically the media owners to basically push them to actually kind of define that for you. They're just defining a product that's very much biased to their product. And you'll never stand out then if you're asking it as an agency. So that's another area as well. I think, you know, whilst the analytics are very important, start exploring this new fast streaming digital space.
Yes.
It's not just about the social media we have right now. And as I mentioned earlier, it's limited products. Think about the bigger picture that's coming. Read all the global trends. Whilst these global players will come into market, they'll have to start localizing themselves. They will be regulated through some bodies, right? But when they come in right now and they're coming into these, you know, global international content and not so much localized, they are going to basically get the attention of a lot of consumers because we play in a global space. People are aware. South Africans are aware of what's out there. And if you're not considering it whilst they enter the market, fragmentation, as I said, don't use the word, but I'm using it now, will be basically 20, 30, 40 times worse than what we see it right now.
Fantastic advice. I mean, I think ultimately you've brought the discussion back to the key point. Find out what's going on. Look at it from the consumer's perspective. The consumers will actually define the strategy for you. You don't have to intuit in your head. Just examine the consumer's behavior pattern, see what they're viewing, and plug into that. So, Strini, thanks. I mean, a really great discussion. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for making the time. And, we're looking forward to some of these new developments taking place.
Thanks, Gordon. Thank you very much. Have a lovely day. Thank you.
Yeah, great. And to all the listeners out there, thanks for joining us. And again, we look forward to some feedback from the Dock in London. A tough week if you're a royalist out there, but it's, as I said, not all bad news. I mean, the Blitzbocker beat Chile in the World Cup in Cape Town. Well done, Bocker. Ciao for now.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.